medical community proudly presents the JDE Connection, a Quest On Air podcast production.
This podcast explores and showcases how JDE customers are harnessing specific functionality and capabilities to drive business success.
Hello, JDE Connection listeners. Welcome back. I'm Chandra Wapshal, one of your podcast hosts, and I'm the Business Solutions Lead at Colas IS Support. With me this week and every week is my friend and podcast partner, Paul Houtcooper, Vice President of JD Edwards Product Development at Oracle. Hey, Paul, what's new this week? Are you still leading your football pool?
No, I'm not, actually. Thank you for bringing that up. I wasn't sure what was new this week other than, hey, we had a, Clayton called it a super uber combined tech and application task force webinar this week, or webcast, or whatever you want to call it.
Yes.
And we had over 300 attendees, and I was told that we've never seen that many emojis in a Zoom meeting before. So apparently you can click the clapping hands and the stars and the fireworks and all that. And as people were going through and highlighting some of the features that we're planning to put out with release 26, apparently it was really well received. Matter of fact, I even got a communication on LinkedIn from a close friend that said, you know, congratulations to the team on an amazing release. We had to have made a very good impression for somebody to think to reach out and congratulate us. So I think that's pretty awesome. But aside from that, yes, whatever FL I had, freaking luck, as you called it, or my FL connection, my Florida connection, did not secure me a win this week. So now I have fallen to second place. But it's a long season. We've got hope. So how about you? What's new with you?
Well, I'm taking a week between gigs, so I start my new job on Monday. So I'm just trying to get caught up with stuff around the house. It seems like it's never ending. This morning, I've run 5 miles. I brushed the dog. I did her nails, and then I gave her a bath. And then, of course, if you give the dog a bath, you kind of have to clean the bathroom because the dog, like, shakes water everywhere. And you're like, oh, lovely, thanks. So got that task done and decided since I was cleaning one bathroom, might as well clean the other bathroom, too. And it's only 10 o'clock. So the day's young. Who knows what I'll accomplish today?
I don't know what to say, good or bad, that this is you with time off. And you don't take time off well, is my guess. So sitting still is not in your DNA.
Correct. That's affirmative. I am not good at sitting still. I pretty much have to be forced to, i.e. when I get sick is about the only time I sit still. So once every couple years.
Well, there you go. Yeah. I mean, you seem to look at days off as challenges. How much can I get done today? Versus most of us that look at days off as, let me get some R&R and recover a little bit. But okay, fine.
Yeah, you know. Haven't even done that this week. Haven't even sat down and put my feet up or took a nap or anything. I've just been busy, busy.
Don't take this the wrong way, but sounds like a personal problem.
It probably is. So it's a personality flaw.
All right, so what's on the docket this week?
Well, we talked about this topic at In Focus, and it was part of our live episode where we covered impact analysis. And we had talked about dependencies. And of course, you, myself, and Clayton Seeley looked at each other and were like, we should probably cover that in a podcast episode. And I'm like, yeah, we probably should. You know, as we were prepping for that, you were running me through it. And I think you said I kind of had a glazed look on my face. So,
yeah, I mean, I thought I explained it brilliantly. I mean, it was clear as mud, obviously, for you. But no, I think I lost my audience that morning about 5 minutes in or 5 words in. I don't know. I had you at dependencies. I don't know. When I said A goes to B goes to C, so if A goes, you know, so if you modify B, you need, anyway, it was pretty fun. So I think we both recognized as we were going through that, that dependencies and understanding them, having a base level understanding of them would be good for anybody and everybody out there. Because yeah, when they go to look for a fix, heaven forbid our software has bugs, but if you do need a fix or you need an enhancement, you're going to go out there and take a look at what it's going to take to get it. And, you know, what's behind that ESU may be a series of ESUs, and your impact analysis can help you understand that, but you may not understand why. Like, why do I have to take all these objects when I just want this one bug? And on this one bug, it says there's just these two objects. Why is it that I need these 65 other objects? How is that possible? Well, it's necessary because of dependencies. So I thought nobody better to explain dependencies to us. Clearly, I can't, but I don't take it personal. But if I can't, damn it, I'll get the expert and the guy that wrote it all and knows it like the back of his hand. And that's Jason Rice. So welcome, Jason, to the JDE Connection.
Thank you.
We are glad to have you.
Yes, we are very glad to have you here.
Dependencies are fun. So whoever thinks that they're not fun, well, get on the bandwagon. It's more fun to talk about dependencies.
I love it. That's awesome. I'm trying to get on that bandwagon, Jason. I am.
I'm trying to bring it back to your horse and cart, you know. That's the thing.
You were jumping on.
That's right. That's perfect. So, Jason, before we get into dependencies, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background with JD Edwards, because you're a bit of the architect behind the curtain. You know, not everybody knows you out there. So tell us a little bit about yourself and your background with JDE.
Yeah, this is true. I am kind of that virtual employee that's in the back office that no one really knows about. And every now and then I come out and have chats with people like this one. And my history with JD Edwards goes way back. I've been in the product line 30 years, worked in apps, worked on major, major product codes back in the day that are still the bread and butter of our product. And then moved into the tools and did various things over the years, of which lifecycle management became one of the critical things. And yeah, back in the day, I got tapped on the shoulder. They said, hey, we got this little thing that's called software updates, and we have this concept of a baseline. By the way, you need to get it done in 2 weeks and we're going live. And I'm like, okay, all right. Well, yeah. And that was the start of this whole dependency thing. I had no idea what I was getting into back then, but easy concept. I mean, it boils down to, it's just a relationship between one object and another object, and you need to satisfy that logical relationship. Otherwise you have breaks in your product. And so it evolves into that relationship that gets paired into a project that gets put into a package that gets delivered to the customers. And eventually those things kind of keep growing one on top of another. And a lot of it is because we produce both fixes and enhancements in the same code line. So anytime you have enhancements, you have new objects, and that's where the dependencies really come into play, where you got to satisfy all those objects in the chain. Otherwise you'll have breaks in the product, and starts at a very small level, but obviously it builds up over time. And the bigger thing now was, we came from an old architecture, a client server solution, of which, you know, back in the day they said, we're only going to have two baselines and that's it. And quickly things had changed. And probably the bigger thing that we talk about now is this new model of continuous integration, where, you know, over the years we had release after release, and you also have these major upgrades. Well, we're not doing the major upgrades anymore. You basically now have one 9.2 release. It's continuous. These updates come through, and the more that you can stay updated, then the less impact you have on a bigger scale. And that's probably the bigger concern with dependencies, is if you've just taken the base install, well, that was over 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so things have radically changed, and it's radically changed because we're producing new enhancements to keep the software current. And if you're not staying current and you're staying way back, yeah, it could be painful because there is a lot of change in there. But once you kind of get over those humps, if you stay on a better process of, I wouldn't say quite weekly, but monthly or quarterly, at least annually, get up to date, then that helps satisfy a lot of these object dependencies. And then the impact isn't as great as waiting 10 years and being like, oh, what am I going to do now?
Right. I mean, it's a good point. I think we should double click a little bit on just dependencies themselves and the different types. But stepping back, you know, we did do this transition. We went through a shift. I don't know, you call it a paradigm shift, but it is a shift in delivery mechanism. We were doing major releases, 8.11, SB1, 8.12, 9.0, 9.1, right? We would do that every 3 to 5 years. And that's when customers would, of course, upgrade and they would get those enhancements. But in between, we were just delivering fixes. And so we weren't mixing our enhancements with our fixes. Now comes 9.2 and we turn it into a continuous cold line, which means we get rid of upgrades and you just have to continuously update your system. Well, now in order for us to deliver enhancements, we have really no choice other than to deliver enhancements alongside our fixes. And to your point, Jason, when you start delivering new objects, it's really the introduction of those new objects that can really accelerate the growth of some of these dependencies, because you won't be able to build and you won't be able to run with missing objects, right? So when we add on that chain, you had ABC and we turn around and we add DEF or we add B1, B2, B3 in the middle of that, all of a sudden you can't run without those new objects because you can't even build or compile without those new objects and you're stuck. And that is a bit of a side effect of this continuous code line and not necessarily something that, hey, back in the day when you developed this whole structure and process around dependencies and the packaging of ESUs, well, we didn't necessarily anticipate that we were going to go to a continuous code line. And I'm guessing, not to air dirty laundry here, but I don't think anybody checked with you or me, to be honest, before they did made that decision. So,
well, yeah, you know, let's get back to the industry sort of guided that, where it's right. Not just our product that has gone to this continuous integration, pretty much all products out there because of these same support reasons. Mm-hmm. And over time, what, like you said, when we did these major releases, it was to sort of produce these enhancements that then you have this, all the objects currently there. But let's face it, in the past, we did backport a lot of stuff because customers wanted those enhancements and it was the right thing to do. And then you put them in the next release. Well, honestly, we won't have a next release. Our next release is now this new release model, which it's release 26 coming out the door, which matches the model year that we're now producing based off of sort of calendar years as well.
Yep, absolutely. And the benefit of the major upgrades and the major releases also was we reset dependencies. Once you got current, everything starts fresh from that new version, so to speak. But the reality is, as you were describing with this continuous integration and continuous delivery model, well, as long as you stay relatively current, it's effectively giving you credit for being current. And therefore, the dependencies may grow one way, but what you need maybe less than that. And we'll get into that in a little bit, but let's rewind the tape just a little bit. Let's get back to, we've got a dependency, which is a logical dependency that you describe. So A, guess what? A calls B, calls C. Fine, logical dependency. I couldn't build A without B. I couldn't build B without C, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But there's multiple types of dependencies, right? That's a logical one. And there's another type of dependency out there, I believe.
Well, yeah, the bigger one that gets caught up, especially in our organization, is what we call blind dependencies, where developers say there's a business function out there. This is what I need it to do. So I'm just going to call into it. And a lot of times they don't have the foresight to see that it was delivered as part of the GA pristine package. So they go ahead and call it, assuming that the customer would already have that. It's a new object and you're now calling it, that creates an issue if the customer doesn't have it and the person developing doesn't always know, oh, by the way, that's not part of the GA product. Well, that is what we call a blind dependency and it will cause a break. And it's not just us delivering the packages. The same thing happens in your environments. If I develop something in DB and I call into something that's only in DB and then I promote my project to say PY, but I didn't promote that object I'm calling, well, guess what? When you do your build in PY, you're going to break it. Same with moving things up to PD. These dependencies, they all need to be satisfied within each of these path code environments. And if they're not, then obviously you have breaks, and then it becomes more difficult kind of backtracking on how and why did this occur. Well, we do have some things in place to help, especially our internal developers, and we want to deliver packages that are cohesive, that do have all these dependencies. And here's the other bigger thing, is there's also dependencies between these ESUs that we don't want to roll them all together too. So we're trying to deliver the smallest kind of software update, but that may require other software updates that also include like our baselines, which the baseline feature really kind of helps customers in the fact that we stop these things from growing and growing and growing. Now the trouble with continuous integration is we have a lot more of them that need to get satisfied. That's one little pain point though, because once you get them, now we also have the ability that we're giving you credit for having them. You don't have to go through that process over and over and over, that you're reapplying all these other dependencies. So the more you stay current, the easier it is to be current, put it down. Yep.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Now, I saw, Chandra, based on your reaction, and again, we don't publish video, but we do record on video so we can see one another and see one another's reactions. And so when you see kind of an aha moment, you can catch it. So as Jason was describing blind dependencies, you seem to pick up on that, like that resonated with you in some way.
Yeah, exactly. I thought of it as like from, and maybe this is a good example or not a good example, but let's say your developer develops something and has a custom table for that application, and they promote from DV to PY, but forget to do the table build.
Yeah, that's a great example. Another good example is if you didn't have your data dictionary shared, and say they created dictionary items, and then they move things up, but they didn't move the dictionary up. It's not shared in your next environment. Well, guess what? You go to generate that table, you're missing data dictionary items. It falls apart in a hurry. So, the dependencies, they come down to a very granular level, and you do need to kind of have them all satisfied. Now, for some of the other things, like when we do our, say, tools builds, you would have compiler errors where we catch them, we don't give you the code. Well, for apps, you kind of own the code when we deliver it. So if you're missing pieces of those calling chains, those breaks have significant impact, and no one wants to do a build and have all these warnings and breaks. That's not the proper way to produce quality software and deliver it. So yeah, it is pretty important we satisfy everything before it gets out the door, but it's not easy for people to understand how high these things go, because we're talking about thousands and thousands of objects. I did look up some numbers, and from where we were on GA9.2, we've increased our object count by more than 7,000 objects in the last 10 years.
Wow.
So at a granular level, when we talk one object calling another object, well, we at least have 7,000 new calls in there. But in reality is a lot of these things in our software call each other, and the chains get deeper and deeper and deeper. And then it's hard to figure out what all is calling what through all of these processes that we put into place. So yeah, the whole calling chain is pretty critical. Here's the other thing. Think about it as we were only talking about, say, an ESU. Well, what about the UDOs? UDOs are now another level on top of the objects that are out there, because a lot of these UDOs are connected to the objects as well. So there's a whole nother level of now dependencies on top of what the normal ESUs have and the normal object dependencies that people talk about. You could have a UDO, it's not going to work because it doesn't have an app behind there. Well, that's right. Kind of easy to resolve. Go get the app and the UDO will work. It's a little different where you do a package build and you're missing business functions that you need, and everything is now broken. And what are you going to do? Well, you got to go figure out what object dependency is back there. But most of those ESUs, as long as you take the whole calling chain, and our software is built up to do that now, especially with the new update manager enhancements, life is much better through the new update manager than this old deployment server and client server technology.
Yeah, I mean, I love the 7,000 new objects example, because imagine if you had to, as a customer, Chandra, if we did just deliver it bug by bug and we just listed out the objects themselves that were on the bugs and we left it to you to try to piece this puzzle together, that after 10 years of us improving 9.2, and whether it be with bug fixes or performance improvements or new capabilities, you go to take the latest three-way voucher match enhancement and you have to piece together a decade's worth of change, because let's say you're just on base 9.2, or you're at where you're at, you're 9.256 where your previous employer was at. That right now is almost 5 years old, right? It's roughly yep. 4 years old. So if you want a three-way voucher match, and that's where your applications lie, you would have to piece together what series of ESUs, or at that point, if we just kept it at a bug level, what combination of bugs and enhancements would you have to take in order to ensure that what you have not only builds, but actually runs? So again, we protect our customers from that, right? We're intended to deliver a cumulative fix that ensures that what they take will build and will run and delivers the capabilities that you desire. And unfortunately, that means that sometimes you have to take some stuff that maybe you didn't. For instance, go back to the three-way voucher match. Maybe you have a bug in procurement and you just want that bug, right, that I delivered this month. Well, a three-way voucher match was delivered, let's say, 3 months ago, but you're not interested in that. I'm sorry, you're going to have to take that enhancement along with this. That's just the way it is, in order to ensure that it works. That doesn't mean you have to use the functionality, but it does mean that you have to take the change. Jason touched on it a little bit there too, and I'll just expand on it a little, that you've got logical dependencies, and I think most people get that. You've got blind dependencies. We introduce a new object and suddenly start leveraging that where we didn't imagine leveraging it before. And that means all of a sudden you have to go take the origin, wherever that object originated, you have to go take that. There are times too when, in order to control dependencies, we recognize that, look, not everybody wants this particular capability, right? And we don't want to combine, let's say, sales, procurement, and manufacturing, because that's just too many objects. So we may very well deliver that new capability with that set of objects independently with a query and special instructions that say, look, if you want this functionality, you have to go take these other two ESUs, but we won't put it out the door combined and basically impact the disinterested customer. We want to protect the disinterested customer. So we will try to manage these as best we can to protect everyone. So they just have to take what they truly need to take. And we mentioned baselines. We've been doing baselines, and arguably we repurposed them. Let's just be fair. Yes, they've always been to reset dependencies, but they're being used now in a way that nobody had envisioned them being used, because we're in a continuous innovation, continuous delivery model. So we want to establish those baselines to continually reset those dependencies, so that if you get current, you get credit, and those dependencies don't continue to grow on you, right? So we're also helping you, if you have good discipline around staying current, we're helping you manage the size and growth of those dependencies as well. I mean, we don't get credit for any of this, Jason. None. This is a lot of work.
Yeah, that's true. And to your point, Paul, when you said cumulative, obviously we're coming out with a release 26, and every year after GA, we do have cumulative updates. And so we're 10 years past our original GA, and the next one is going to be, you know, release 26, a UN 26 coming out. That is your major release update. And you could go and just say, hey, each year we take the major cumulative update. And we kind of talked about before, as it's not as painful as what people think. And with our new update manager and our new web deploy, we were able even to do workshops where within an hour, you can do a download of it and then upload into your system and deploy it. And it's a bit shocking how quick and fast things move, because we have kind of updated the whole life cycle now to make things work better and faster And even just moving to this kind of non-platform specific model has just changed the game on us, because we removed out all the Windows stuff. So packages are smaller. They deploy faster. We move the installer out of there. Things just work a lot better. And so, yeah, it's easier now to stay up to date than being like, oh, that's like a 5-day, 2-year project that I have to take a cumulative update. That's not the case anymore. Things are a lot more streamlined.
Yeah.
I think that's where a lot of our customers still are, though, where they just view it so much as it's a massive project. It's going to take us a year to do an upgrade because, well, quite frankly, a lot of us have a lot of retrofits to do because, you know, JD Edwards is so flexible and allows us to customize to meet our business needs, right? Now, the downside of that is that if we are doing actual custom code versus UDOs, it's going to take us a little bit longer. And so I think people get scared and aren't as knowledgeable.
And you're bringing up a new idea that, in fact, as we talk with Clayton, there is a whole decustomizer feature that we have out there. And that's the thing, is if you're modifying base objects, that tends to create more work for you. Well, we have some new features now with like extended forms and the logic services or extended logic, that now you can replace those customizations, and you should. And then the impact of taking software updates is not near as hard as having to reapply all these mods that you had. And yeah, so we're trying to enable people to move on to a better model instead of staying in that old model, which, yeah, it could be painful. And if you have a lot of modifications, then that does become a concern. I don't know if I should bring it up. We did do a project of object usage tracking, and we really focused on, you know, we wanted to have numbers to show where objects are getting used. People have now really turned that into a whole lot of other things where you're really snooping on people, which I love to do. Even in our own organization, I'm like, oh, did you look at these numbers? I should just shut my mouth. I know that. But it has revealed, like, if you've had a lot of custom applications, or are they even getting used? And you tend to find out that they're not even getting used. Well, why are you carrying along this custom? And listening to people, they've started being like, they enable the tracking. They see it's not getting used, and they get rid of it. And you don't even keep it on your spreadsheet list that we're keeping track of these modifications anymore.
Staying in the JDE loop is easy with Quest. Sign up for our free JD Edwards newsletter, or follow Quest JDE on LinkedIn or Facebook for the latest Oracle updates, new content publication, and news on upcoming webinars and events. For more info, visit questoraclecommunity.org/JD Edwards.
I'm curious, Chandra, I mean, how often do you find it, or did you find it, you know, in your career so far, where the business comes up with, I need XYZ, right? I need this capability today, or I need a report like this, or I need this information. And it's not readily available, right, in any one individual app, or it's not, you know, maybe you can get it through Data Browser or something like that. But the reality is you go spin up a report, or you spin up a quick application with your application developer to go satisfy that need. But it was a one-time purpose-built need, right? And then it's done, and you don't really need it. But do you ever go back a week later and say, okay, they're done with that, let's delete it? Instead, it just sits there, right? And then however long later, 18 months, 24 months later, you try to look at doing an update, and you list that on your list of objects that needs to be retrofitted or moved. And it's like, why? We can get rid of that. Is that fair? I mean,
yes,
it happens.
Absolutely. I would say that happens a lot, where the business comes with a requirement that they need something specific from us. So like you said, we spin up a custom report, we spin up a custom application to meet their needs. And then what happens is they end up not using it, or they use it for only a certain amount of time. You know, the business then changes
because that happens. Never said anyone. Or they change the way they look at it. So then you develop something new for them. It's just how business is. Business changes and evolves. But yeah, we don't do a good job of then saying, okay, let's go back and, you know, in my case, we may not want to delete that permanently. We might want to push it off to another environment so it's out of the way. Right. Spin up another environment for all our old objects that we don't necessarily want to delete because we're not a fan of deleting. And then clean house, if you will, from there. But
at some point,
most of that, again, I hate to say it, it just comes back to time and resources.
Yeah.
Right? We're all juggling so much. And it feels like with even less resources than we had. And unfortunately, it just gets put by the wayside unless you make it a prime focus for your organization. And that's somewhat hard to do.
It is. I agree. Some of the feedback that I've received recently, too, is just the discipline that it takes to remain current and separating out staying current from adoption.
Yes.
Rather than if you associate adoption with applying the latest release, that cycle, then you're introducing more complexity, you're increasing scope, therefore you're increasing risk that that's going to overrun. And so businesses want to know that this update cycle takes 6 weeks and that's it. They'll fund it for 6 weeks. Well, at that point, you really got to disconnect the update cycle from the adoption cycle, but you still need to fund that adoption cycle separately and make that its own thing that also occurs on a regular cadence, that this is what we go through. This time of year, every year, we spend time taking inventory of the new feature function and figuring out what's going to work for us. We also take time every 6 months or 12 months or whatever it is to take inventory of our customizations, take inventory of all those things and see what we can do to retire, see what we can do to replace. There's just an ongoing effort. And that way you're always chiseling at that debt. You're always looking at what's new and trying to adopt, but you're not putting the getting current and getting your security updates and getting these new capabilities, whether they be performance improvements like Jason was talking about with our build times are better by 80%, right? The deploy process is now night and day from what it is. You want to continually have access to those sorts of things, but you want to do it in a very disciplined way rather than an all-in-one scenario, so to speak.
Right. I think one of the things that was brought up as a challenge, I guess I would say, for some organizations is, yeah, you guys are pushing out ESUs, you're pushing out enhancements so frequently that it's really hard on the businesses, because if we were taking them as often as you're pushing them out, it would be a continuous testing cycle, which just isn't sustainable. Even if you have everything automated, it's still going to be really difficult. So where's that balance of how often is good enough to not have our dependencies get out of control, but yet not have ourselves and our users just be testing all the time?
Yeah, I think it's a, you know, again, we went to a weekly, I think we deliver apps, ESUs weekly, right? And we deliver web runtime enhancements and fixes quarterly. And we've gone to like a semi annual basis for foundation. So you have a lot of flexibility there. But I would say if you look at ESUs and the fact that we're delivering them weekly, that's not because we think that's exactly what people should do. Right, Jason? I mean, we're doing that to give you flexibility. That means you can take what you want
and
when you want.
Well, and that comes down to critical fixes, right?
Yeah.
There are customers that have a critical fix. They need that fix. You don't necessarily do paper fixes anymore. So you do it through the software update process, and for the critical bugs that they have, they need to get that. Again, because it mixes with the enhancements, you do have these other dependencies that you do need to take that go with it. But there again, those enhancements don't always affect everything, just like that one critical fix doesn't affect every single customer. But we're still on that cadence that we give customers that ability to at least get those fixes. And, you know, there's some critical areas, and let's call it out, sales order entry, Every week, you can kind of expect that there's a customer needing a critical fix. You look at, say, payroll. Well, yeah, there's certain times that payroll needs some fixes. You know, you come up to year end and yeah, there's always some year end and legal stuff that needs to happen. And you got to get those critical fixes, especially going into January. And so it's good to have our process deliver it at those incremental points. There again, you got to figure out what works best for your company. Coming in and focus and sitting in the SIG group, I've heard customers say, hey, we're staying current every month and we don't have problems. And they don't go and ask their business analyst. They just take their updates, they apply them, and they keep their business running. Of course, they might have limited customizations, but there is something to be said by staying current. And even if you are current, a lot of those fixes do not always affect every single customer. I should also kind of bring up, over time when we did NI2, we did redesign that model for what we now call user-defined objects. And we threw in a history. Well, as part of our 9.2, we did do a files to database project and now include objects in that history, where it's also good to know that, you know, you could revert back if you had to, just like the ESU process backs up all your objects. If you do a backup and if you really had to do a restore, you could do that too. And for us, testing wise, I do it all the time because you get caught up on deploying an ESU. Well, once it's deployed, it's already updated. Well, guess what? I need to back it out. I restore it and get back to where I needed to be to then maybe I take a newer ESU that replaces the one that was sort of suspect out there. So I get it. There's a lot of management, but there's also a lot of flexibility in there to keep everything running. And even though you take all these objects, it might come down to, oh, only this one object had a real problem. And that goes back to when I first started, they started talking about the whole cherry picking thing. Well, yeah, you could, everyone wants to cherry pick their one little thing. Well, as long as you have all the other dependencies, not a whole problem. But when people try and shortcut it, like, oh, I just want to take this one ESU, but I'm not taking the dependencies. Then all of a sudden they're calling support and saying, oh, it doesn't work. Well, yeah, you kind of need to have all those other parts and pieces that goes with it. It's like your car. Yeah, well, you need to kind of have all four tires on it to keep rolling down the road.
True. Does not work well otherwise.
No, it doesn't. Oh, that's awesome.
That's a very good analogy. I like it.
All right. Well, I mean, any other questions that you had, Chandra, about dependencies? I think we've covered it pretty darn well as change management and many other things.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think this was a great conversation. Thank you, Jason, so much for coming on with us and walking us through dependencies. And now I know who to call when I have a question. Not Paul. Not me. I'll call you.
Not me.
You did.
That's awesome. So do we have a Midwesternism this week?
Well, this week, we're going to talk about another colloquialism, your favorite word. When it comes to dependencies, you don't want to put the cart before the horse.
All right. So you don't, you know, don't jump ahead. Don't jump to any conclusions. Don't make any, I mean, effectively putting the cart before the horse. I mean, don't make assumptions, right? Don't jump to conclusions.
Is that where? Don't jump to conclusions. But also, if you do have a logical dependency, you better not put A ahead of B, if B should be ahead of A.
Sure. Let me get my head wrapped around that.
Good luck. Yeah. I'm not sure I did either. It's all good, though.
I mean, this one's pretty close to the previous one of making a mountain out of a molehill. At the same time, don't jump to any conclusions. Don't jump to, you know, don't make assumptions. Don't put the cart before the horse. Do your due diligence. Dig in. For instance, you may not need all those objects. When you first look at an ESU and you look at it through Update Center, it may be that it has many, many, many baselines behind it. There could be hundreds of objects behind that. But if you do your due diligence with impact analysis and you've been regular and fairly current, you'll get credit for those updates. And as a result, when you peel it back and look underneath the hood, you may find that the change isn't as big as you thought it was. So again, don't put the cart before the horse, but at the same time, it can go the other way. If you turn around and you're looking at a particular fix that you need and there's only one object on it, don't assume that that's all it's going to take, because it may very well be that you're not up to date. And as a result, you're going to need 65 objects. Who knows? Again, so be patient. Do your due diligence. Don't put the cart before the horse. I like it.
Excellent. Well, for questions, feedback, or ideas for future episodes, contact us at the JDEConnection@QuestOracleCommunity.org. Until next time, let's keep learning, sharing, and most importantly, laughing together. Toodles!
See ya! Thank you for tuning in for today's episode of the JDE Connection, a Quest On Air podcast production. Show notes and links can be found at QuestOracleCommunity.org/JDEConnection.
To learn more about what's happening in the Quest J.D. Edwards community, visit our website at QuestOracleCommunity.org/JD Edwards.